Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Anthony Anderson, Democrat Peter Giangreco, and Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. A program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com. And for the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking about the week's politics this past week. And we'll be looking into the Benghazi investigation, also looking into some questionable activities by the IRS as they went after some Tea Party folks. And we'll be talking about that for the next 2 hours on this week's edition of Beyond the Beltway. We begin with the top story, which was dominated in all the Sunday morning shows as well as news last week, and that is the House investigation into the Benghazi attack last September and its impact on how we all voted, how we reacted to it, and whether or not the administration was telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth when they were communicating to the American people. Now, to many, it's old news. Even to Hillary Clinton, who ultimately testified, said, who cares? You know, it's old news. It's what matter does it make? Well, tonight we're going to be talking about that. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago joins us. Charles, in your view, should we care about the specifics of this case? And if so, in your opinion, why?
I think we should care. I care because I'm interested in foreign policy, but I think that the larger political resonance is because four Americans died while serving their country, and most Americans now can see from the testimony last week and from the leaked emails and from reporting by Steve Hayes in the Weekly Standard and Jonathan Curl on ABC that the story that was given out after, immediately after, and in the days after was not true and was cooked in ways that were designed to cover the rear ends of those people who were involved.
I want to ask our two partisans tonight how to react to the story and the way it's being played. Pete Giangreco, nice to have you back, one of the leading political operatives in the Democratic Party. Helped put Barack Obama in the White House and keep him in the White House. Mm-hmm. Your reaction, and what is the political fallout of this investigation?
Well, I think what it needs to play out here is that I think the Republicans are learning that there's a difference between a horribly tragic set of mistakes and a scandal. I mean, there's no doubt that mistakes were made in the run-up to Benghazi. I think the report that Admiral Mullen and Ambassador Pickering, their investigation made it pretty clear that there was a hue and cry within in country from both Tripoli and from Benghazi about the problems with security there, and they were ignored. That led to, frankly, the investigation has led to the firing of the people who had line responsibilities for those decisions in the State Department. So I think what you have here is a horribly tragic set of mistakes. And the mistakes went further even beyond afterwards, where they got it wrong. They conflated some of the things that happened in Egypt with what was going on in Libya. But those have all been admitted to, that people who were in line, had line responsibility, have been fired. And I think that we've gotten where we've got a straight answer on this stuff.
Anthony Anderson also joins us. He is our Republican tonight, former U.S. Marine. When you look at this from a political standpoint, Anthony, is there great political hay to be made out of this particular story?
Oh, absolutely. But, again, this isn't the first administration that's going through these type of troubles. We've had President Reagan with the Iran-Contra affair. We've had Nixon with Watergate. We've had Clinton with Lewinsky. So, I mean, this is not part and parcel of any other administration. It's just happened on his watch. Does this go all the way to the top, to Obama's office? I'm sort of leery at this point to say that, but It is a scandal,
but
nonetheless.
But in this particular case, I mean, you have people from the White House, based on what was said last week, you had people from the White House who were weighing in on the intricacies of what was said in this report. So there was some White House involvement.
There's some White House involvement, but does it go so far as the president himself misled the public? I mean, because the election was so close, the narrative had to change. And under those pretenses, I would say that Obama knew only so much. But you had hacks around you, so you knew some things. But how much you knew, I can't tell.
This was a politically sensitive issue. As recently as 4 days, I think it was, maybe a week before Benghazi, President Obama was saying that he had al-Qaeda on the run. And they did not want that whole narrative to be upended. I absolutely agree with Anthony. We don't know how far up this goes. We don't know most of what really happened. The administration has not revealed material, and we don't know how involved people like Ben Rhodes, the number two person at the
It seems to me here that what is missing or not acknowledged here is that when Susan Rice went on 5 Sunday morning shows and basically told the American people that the demonstrations were a surprise and that this video was the responsibility of it, that clearly, when she went on those 5 shows, I cannot believe that the President of the United States does not know that a person of Susan Rice's stature is going on 5 shows to tell a story to the American people. And I can't believe that the President of the United States was not privy to all of the information.
That's a good question, but we don't know the answer to it yet.
Well, I think we do know the answer.
We don't know. Hillary actually said the same thing, blaming the video, which was nowhere mentioned, even in the talking points, in front of the caskets of these people.
Right. Well, what we do know is they got that wrong. They conflated. That was absolutely.
The question is whether
that was the absolute correct call on what happened in Egypt. What happened in Egypt was a reaction to the video. This is the difference between a mistake and a scandal. They got it wrong. They conflated events. Susan Rice went out and told the American people something that was a completely misunderstood, misinterpreted set of events.
But no,
that is different from saying, I'm going to come out and tell you something that I know is false, which is not what happened.
The event, it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I mean, what we do know, and here's a quote that we're going to put on the screen for our television folks. This is what the CIA said in their memo. Quote, we do know that Islamic extremists with ties to al-Qaeda participated in the attack. They went on to name the group Ansar el-Sharia. Now, that's what they said. So the White House was aware of it. And that statement, which was in their report in the first talking point, that was excised by the White House. The American people to know that information.
Wait, that's not true.
It is.
Dianne Feinstein, who's the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee and who I think is a pretty straight shooter, said today that the White House did not do that, that that's not true. The State Department did. But the White House's impact on that statement was 2 things. To correct it, it was not a consulate, it was a mission, and to change some syntax in one sentence. That's all the White House did.
We'll be back shortly. You got to take calls in a minute. Back shortly. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We have lots of callers on the line. Let's go to Ron listening to us in Elk Grove, California on KTKZ. Good to hear from California. Go ahead, Ron.
Hi, Bruce. First, I would not be too surprised if we see a few false flag shooting events to distract attention. But anyways, my question pertains to the media and their incompetence of most of it and not going after either the Benghazi thing, which happened in September, and the other thing, the IRS. I mean, they have the opportunity to go from basically lapdogs to performing their duty as a fourth estate and bring some people in the administration into the woodshed for some real constitutional comeuppance. And I hope the Congress and John Boehner gets off his seat and gets a few investigative
committees. Ron, I think that what is likely to happen here, because I think your frustration as a Republican or as a conservative with the way in which the national media has basically been adoring to the administration, I think what you're going to find out is that this is a case that is being handed to them on a silver platter. You've got emails, you've got conflicting emails, you have things that were didacted and taken out of with information, certainly that the American people, in my view, certainly should have had 2 months before an election. Didn't happen. This is getting to be a very clear-cut case. Now, whether or not the media and also, again, and we're going to talk about it in the second hour, the IRS and their involvement and their playing politics, the Tea Party is also pretty clear.
Ron, I thought your point on the media not handling this is exactly right. And, Bruce, I would just say, having watched the media scrum on Friday with Jay Carney, who looked like he was just being raked over the coals, what really got the media was not that they got the story wrong, but that they felt like they were lied to. And I think that that's one thing that is very hard for a press secretary to get back, which is his credibility. I think that they may go after it, but I was still struck. NBC ran a nightly news, ran it as their lead story Friday. And then the number two story was the IRS. But I watched PBS, and they do four big stories. They did none of those stories. They did not do Benghazi after the big news that had come out by Jonathan Carl. They didn't do the IRS. Well, what are they doing?
The other thing about this particular case is the top State Department official who we're talking about, Ms. Nuland, Victoria Nuland. She, according to these emails, and again, there were over 100 emails between all the agencies. Mm-hmm. She clearly pressed the CIA and the White House to delete any mention of terrorism in the public statements on the Benghazi attack, and also because she was worried that it was going to create conflict and make her department and leadership in her department, and who is that? Who is leadership in the State Department? Mm-hmm. Make them look bad, especially as it relates to the fact that they had advance warnings from the CIA that there was likely to be problems in this area. But when the CIA clearly names Al-Qaeda. I mean, I want to speak to this particular point because Charles basically made the point, which we've heard for several months now, is that the narrative that the president had in his campaign is, I was the guy that got Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. We're winning the war against, we didn't win the war, but we're winning the war against Al-Qaeda. So this thing comes up, it flies in the face of what the campaign narrative is in September, 2 months before the American people vote. And you have the CIA saying, yes, Al-Qaeda was involved. Islamic extremists, because the president never wanted to use the terms.
And the State Department guy on the ground says it on the phone to Hillary Clinton.
Well, yeah, look, here's the key thing. I think David Brooks got this right today when he was on Meet the Press. And David Brooks is not a friend of this administration. I would think it's clear to say he's a conservative critic of the administration. He said, look, everybody's getting caught up on these emails and these statements. He said, this is not a fight between Democrats and Republicans in this statement. This is a fight that has been going on for 60 or 70 years. This is the CIA, as Senator Feinstein said, was responsible for the security. That was their gig. The communications that went up the State Department side asking for more security was a result of them on the ground feeling like the CIA was not doing their job. Let me finish. Yes. Yes. And they were turned down. And what Brooks says is that the initial CIA memo about what this was written in a way to cover their behind. And he said for everybody to think that the CIA is this pure in knowledge and all-knowing entity. I mean, this goes back to the Bay of Pigs. It goes back to the Reagan administration. It goes back to Bush, that the CIA and the State Department fight over stuff like this all the time.
I agree with that. For this embassy here. It's not like they didn't know that they were having problems.
It's not an embassy, by the way.
I mean, okay, the compound, before they were overrun. Right. And the fact of the matter is the Secretary of State knew that they had security problems also.
Yes,
and
they did.
It's not as though this is new to anyone. The fact of the matter is, a lot of things happened that night. The blame should have been squarely on Al-Qaeda and member of Al-Qaeda, and that wasn't the case. It was misinformation from the beginning to the end, and now everybody's caught up on it.
I want to go back to the statement.
And by the way, I agree. I agree with your comment that the turf battles between the CIA and the FBI and NSA and law enforcement and the myriad of intelligence operations we have in this country, the apparatus, is legendary. That's not right. likely going to change. They're battling over turf. They're battling over budget. They're always finger pointing. Fortunately, more often than not, they're doing their job as well.
Right.
But frequently, you know, they want to take blame. In this particular case, though, it seems to me that you have them doing their job. You're questioning
them
whether or not
the
CIA doing their job. Part of this story clearly involves the State Department.
Right.
And they're now coming up. They're now concocting the talking memo, which they're going to send Susan Rice out to share with the American people 2 weeks, 2 months before the election. Okay. The initial unclassified memo, which was produced by the CIA for distribution to lawmakers and government officials. So they were in on what was going on. It was supposed to address, obviously, because they were being asked questions by the public. They said that the attacks linked to Al-Qaeda that were known to be operating in Benghazi. No one from the administration was suggesting that. Susan Rice never suggested that. But that was in the initial report that the CIA wanted to share with the American people. And this is what they also said, quote, the agency, referring to the CIA, the agency has produced numerous pieces on the threat of extremists linked to Al-Qaeda in Benghazi and eastern Libya. Quote, we cannot rule out the individuals has previously surveilled the U.S. facilities, also contributing to the efficacy of the attacks.
Right,
that was left in the report. The initial version describing a string of five attacks on the foreign interest, that paragraph was deleted. So everything about there was an MO here, there was a history here.
Right.
Why did they want to take that out when the administration was trying to explain to the American people what had happened and the loss of four lives? And people were beginning to wonder, why can we not protect our ambassador? Why would the administration not want that out? Let's talk about the politics of it.
I think there's three competing forces at work here. You have career State Department people and career CIA people. They're not political. They're institutional. They're not political in an electoral sense, but they are just as political as anybody else in Washington. And what the CIA wanted to do was to say, hey, we told the State Department this was going to be a problem. And what the State Department did not want is my read on this and watching Feinstein and some of the other ones today only reinforced this, that the State Department wanted to say we never got tactical intelligence that there was a specific threat. Because it made them, the people who got fired, frankly, look bad. Because if what they didn't want the report to say, and this is a bureaucracy, this has got nothing to do with Hillary Clinton or the White House. This is one entrenched bureaucracy at war with another one saying, no, we never had tactical intelligence. Yeah, we knew that there were all kinds of bad things going on.
That Victoria Nuland at the State Department, she was playing politics 101.
She was protecting
Hillary Clinton and her department.
She is a career State Department person.
And she was correct.
Secretaries of State come and go. But Bruce, this is what
you're missing. She was expressing the concerns of her, quote, leadership. Yeah. What leadership was she talking about?
Was Hillary Clinton not aware of this?
I think you're
talking about the State Department, the folks that are there under Democrats and Republicans. People come and go. Secretaries of State come and go. Presidents come and go.
If you're a career person and they survive administration after administration, certainly one of the things that you realize is you protect the boss.
Exactly.
The first thing you do, you dive on the sword for the boss.
There is
not if they've stayed there for 10 or 20 years, because they don't care about the boss. They think the boss is going to be gone soon.
There's bureaucratic politics at play, but that's not what's driving this. When the White House controlled the interagency, we need to know what Ben Rhodes and the people who were actually in charge were doing. We don't know that now.
We don't know
what the president was doing, and we don't know what Hillary Clinton was doing. We do know that the statements that were put out by the administration were false, and they must have known they were false, and we therefore need to know more.
We got to pause. Also, we do know what the president did. The president went fundraising in Nevada. 1-800-723-8289. Back shortly with your calls. 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Our Democrat tonight is Peter Giangreco. He is a principal in the Strategy Group. He's one of the leading Democratic political operatives in the country, having helped put Barack Obama in the White House and kept him there as well. Also involved in a variety of other campaigns, including Tammy Baldwin's successful run for the United States Senate in Wisconsin. Also joining us is Anthony Anderson. He is a frequent guest on this program. He is a Republican. He is with the Republican Precinct Project. And also he's in the criminal justice system when he's not talking politics. Charles Lipson also joins us, longtime guest on this program from the University of Chicago, hails from Marks, Mississippi, and we take lots of callers tonight. 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Jerry, listening to us in Cookeville, Tennessee on WLS. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hey, good evening, Bruce, and good evening to all the members of your panel there. Two quick points. The first point is, when the president made his speech at the UN 2 weeks after the fact, mm-hmm. he brought up the film about this terrible film that was brought up that caused all this trouble.
Yes,
and
sir.
The president said, and I quote, "The future must not belong to those who slandered the prophet of Islam." Now, I find that just absolutely bone-chilling, coming from a president of the United States making a statement like that. Does anybody there, I mean, does that not bother anybody?
Well, it certainly when you look at it was stunning. And as I said in the last segment, this administration does not like to put the word extremist and Islam in the same sentence. They just will not do it. And in this particular case, again, when you factor in that we're talking about, and this occurred 2 months before an election, the president was running. One of the strengths of what he was running on was that he got Osama bin Laden. And there had been some successful attacks, and there had been successful, elimination of key Al Qaeda leadership. I mean, that was a big plus. So I think the professor was correct in his early statement that this was something that came along that really it flew in the face of the narrative. And so when you have your the CIA basically saying that yes, this was done by extremists, Islamic extremists. And they use the term, that's in the quote, Islamic extremists with a connection to Al-Qaeda. I mean, how much more specific can you be when you're intelligent?
And then
you decide, that. Then the big question here, and this is what I think history is going to continue to debate, is this is a piece of information that the president, because the buck does stop with him, right. The president and his advisors decided we are not going to share that piece of information with the American people.
Now, see, Bruce, I think you're reading the politics of this wrong. And look, I'm not an expert on foreign policy, but I know a thing or two about campaigns. The only thing worse than interrupting your narrative about, we got bin Laden and we took out everybody mm-hmm. in Yemen is getting caught being wrong. And knowingly being wrong. So I think you make it sound like
he just had to play out the game for 2 months.
Yeah, but your analysis was, oh, they did this because of the campaign. And I'm telling you, having been a part of both of the Obama campaigns, the biggest risk that they assign is when you say something that's not true, and it can be proven that it's not true. So the fact that they got this wrong was not driven by the politics of the campaign.
Well,
they got this wrong for other reasons. They got it wrong for other reasons.
They got it wrong for the reason that they tried to mislead the public. Period.
No.
They misled the public.
They said something that wasn't true. Did they know that it was false?
The Secretary of State did not receive tactical support from the CIA. I find that hard to believe.
I'm talking about your motive.
You just asked the question.
You just asked me the question.
Right.
Did they really know that it was wrong? And what I'm saying is, when your CIA says in their initial report, we're talking about the talking points.
Right.
This is the first draft of the talking points. When your CIA says, we do know that Islamic extremists with ties to Al-Qaeda participated in the attack. That's what the CIA said.
And then you didn't strip that out. You didn't didact that from the thing, and then you send Susan Rice out on all the shows to say it was this spontaneous demonstration.
It was this movie. She goes on five shows.
Because she was lying through her teeth. And they made a mistake. She didn't lie through her teeth. She got it wrong.
What was true in Egypt?
That the disturbances that went on in Egypt were sparked by the video, the anti-Islam video. That is absolutely true. That analysis of Egypt was correct. Applying that analysis to Libya was dead wrong.
I'm telling you, as a political person, let me make my larger point.
Let me make the larger point. There is more political risk in making and getting that wrong.
Only if you have a media that will investigate it.
Than it is in disturbing some wonderful narrative.
If you have a lapdog media, Bruce is saying that the motivation was by the campaign.
I'm telling you, dead wrong.
If you have a lapdog,
it got
media,
wrong
there's
for some other reason.
No
motivation.
Risk.
The motivation. There's no risk involved.
The motivation that we know last week. Based on the investigation, many months, people have already voted. Some people saying, why are we discussing? It's old news. Hillary Clinton herself, who cares when she testified? Who cares? Well, why is it important? She doesn't want this subject being brought up because it potentially makes her look bad. She gets to her chief deputy, Victoria Nuland, who was the one that was worried when the first talking point memo came out. It was changed 12 times. ABC came up with 12 versions of it. They went through it. CBS Today on Face the Nation, they went through the minute-by-minute change
of that memo. The White House won't even release that material now.
Hold on a second. No, look, this is what you're saying is that the White House changed it 12 times, and that is factually
wrong. No, I didn't say the White House changed it.
Let me explain this. What Senator Feinstein said today on Meet the Press, and she was right about this, was the only change that the White House, there were two changes in it. John Brennan changed the order of a couple of words in one sentence, and they changed, it was listed as a consulate, which is wrong because when you're at an embassy or a consulate, you have a Marine detachment.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Anthony?
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
At an outpost like this, you don't. You have contractors and CIA, and you rely on the local militia, and which, in retrospect, in most Americans' eyes, when you have an ambassador somewhere,
they do would consider that an embassy.
This is important.
It's not, and that's very important.
But here's the point.
No,
Bruce,
it reported it as a bombing of a U.S. embassy.
Wait a minute. Let me just.
We would have Marines.
Part of what we're trying to resolve here is, this is based on what. The testimony last week before the hearing, that's all we're dealing with.
Right.
We're talking about people who were in the State Department, who come up, who are sworn to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And we're now dissecting what they said.
And
a staffer at the White House, yeah. National Security Council, managing the review of the talking points, wrote Victoria Nuland, because he was in the loop. There were 100 emails going back and forth. And he said, quote, the FBI did not have major concerns with the points and offered only a couple of minor changes. After some minor edits, Nuland continued to object that these changes don't resolve all of my issues
or those
of my building's leadership.
Foggy Bottom. That's the State Department.
Leadership.
What I'm trying to make
Hillary Clinton
clear
is
point,
the head. That's the leadership.
This is where
Foggy Bottom.
This is where you're misleading your listeners, Bruce. You are saying the White House did this, and the White House did not. Newland doesn't work at the White House. Newland works at the State Department. That's the point.
And I asked one question.
Let's talk about the hearings here for a second.
The reason why we're talking about only this,
which Brooks is dismissed and Feinstein is dismissed, a lot of people have dismissed this.
But the American people haven't dismissed it.
This talking points thing is a small sidebar on this.
It is not.
The only reason we're talking about this is because Daryl Issa chaired this committee.
No, the reason why we're talking about it is because Hillary Clinton clearly stated that this happened, that happened, who cares? That's why we're talking about it, because we have four dead Americans. That's why we're talking about it. That's why we're talking about it.
No.
That's absolutely
true. The reason we're talking about this
today. An ambassador has been killed.
An American ambassador has not been killed in 30 years.
That is the reason why we're talking about this.
By the way, the reason why we're fixated on this statement.
We're not fixed. But
it's because that's all that was talked about at the hearings.
Pete's position is instructive because what he's saying is that the fallback position for the White House now is, which was originally and is consistently been, throw the CIA under the bus. The fallback position is throw the State Department under the bus.
Is the president going to throw Hillary under the bus?
No, I'm trying to get the radio listeners and the folks on TV to understand.
The White House is circling the wagons, and that's what you hear.
Look, by the way, Peter, can I make my point here? After I make my point, and then you can make your point, and we've got to go to calls because a lot of calls are out there.
Right.
You're making the point that, you know, it was the State Department, the White House didn't know anything about it. I go back to the question, and this is now, what did the president know, when did he know it, and how did he react? And here's the question. Okay, it's the hottest story in the world. The White House is going to agree that someone is going to go on the Sunday morning shows. Susan Rice is elected to go on all the Sunday shows. She was on five different shows. And what you want me to believe, you want me to believe that in 2 months before a campaign, you want me to believe that Barack Obama personally, was not interested in what Susan Rice was going to tell five journalists, and the American people were going to feed that message.
That's not even close to what I'm saying. What I'm saying is what Senator Feinstein said today, which was the only two changes the White House made in that document were the two that I said. The rest of this was a food fight between the State Department and the CIA.
So you're saying that the White House decided that they were going to take the Al-Qaeda comment out?
No, they didn't. The State Department did.
Didn't stay in there. Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's head south to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Stan is listening to us on WAPI. Nice to hear from Alabama, Stan.
All right, guys. Thanks for taking my call today, and I just want to say that I am a Democrat, and I have voted for Barack Obama twice. And today, of course, I'm American also, and my heart is broken because I had to get honest with myself that anyone that if you just get honest and if you've got any sense at all can see that there's issues with the whole Benghazi right before the election. And, you know, my heart is broken, and I hope that my Democratic Party can come up with some better alternatives next time around, and I'll leave you guys, and I'll listen to what you got to say. Thanks again.
Let me just ask that. Thanks very much for your call. Let's specifically talk now just about the politics of Hillary Clinton, okay? Which Democrats suggest that what this is about, it's messing her up, roughing her up. That's the goal. That's what the Democrats believe. First of all, do you believe that? And secondly, because this is not likely to be a story that goes away, is this somewhat of an albatross around her neck if she chooses to run for president?
Oh, there's no question that the hearings last week that Daryl Issa ran were a political hatchet job. If it was really a fact-finding operation, Ambassador Pickering wouldn't have been barred from it. He asked to be there the day before. The majority said, no, we don't want you having a different version of the facts than our star witnesses.
He's going to be invited next
week. That's number one. Number two, they refused to have any of the military commanders there so that ISA could have a whole day and a whole week where he could be the center of the news and where he could attack the administration. So the fact that Pickering was not allowed to testify, that the military was not allowed to testify, tells you this was a total partisan witch hunt. And I think the Republicans, Charles and I talked about this, are overplaying their hands. The overplaying of their hands started on September 11th of 2012 when the Romney campaign attacked Obama in one of the dirtiest, sleaziest, frankly, unpatriotic attacks in American presidential history. Before the fires were out, before we even knew that Ambassador Stevens was dead, the Romney campaign committed, I think, a cardinal sin.
What did they say?
They came out and attacked the president and said he was weak, and there was a very political attack.
Well, they attacked the president because they seen the president as weak. Here you have a dead ambassador. What were they supposed to say?
No, they shot.
What were they supposed to say?
They shot first. They shot first.
You have a dead ambassador. What were you supposed to say? It's the first time in 30 years. What were they supposed to say? Oh, Mr. President, you're doing a great job. Don't stop there.
Gentlemen, let's not end at our shorts.
Gentlemen, they attacked the commander in chief. We're not
replaying the last presidential election.
But that's where it started, and it continued this week.
We're looking at the next one, and I want to get Charles' point.
He did make a serious error in coming out early.
What about Hillary in 2016?
There's no question, but that this is partially aimed at her, and it definitely will be an albatross. How big an albatross, we won't know until we get more information. But it is not right to say that it is a partisan hack job. It is exactly right to say that what they are trying to do is begin with the people who had immediate knowledge on the ground, and you do this like a serious investigation in which you build your way up. And the fact is, the Pickering and Mullen report leaves a lot of questions unanswered, and they
should
be.
So why wasn't he allowed to testify?
He should be,
but behind closed doors. That's how you know it was a four-media circus plan. If it was if it was a serious investigation, Pickering would have been there. Mullen would have been there.
This is going to go on.
Wait a minute, Peter, this comes from Tammy Duckworth, by the way, who sat there for four hours through this.
Peter, listen to this. You talked about serious investigations. If it was a serious investigation by Mr. Pickering and Admiral Mullen, who have no experience in investigating anything, you put them in charge. You put the chickens in charge of the roosters, looking at the chicken, figuring, you know, where did this happen?
But then, and by then the way, all of their wisdom,
you've got the ambassador and you've got the admiral. Okay, you got credentials up the yin yang. Okay. They didn't ask any questions to Hillary Clinton.
Yes, they did.
They didn't ask any questions to the Secretary of State.
Pickering said on Meet the Press today they did.
Cheryl Mills, who is the key aide to Clinton. No, this is all – this was a very poor job. And you can say it could either be a poor job because they were incompetent or it could be something else.
No, Charles, you got your facts wrong.
They were as inquisitive as the Warren Commission.
Pickering said – on Meet the Press today, that they did interview the Secretary of State. So that's not true what you just said. He said it today on Meet the Press, and he had to correct ISA. ISA, who, by the way, either did not read the Pickering report, especially the classified parts, or he chose to go on national television and deliberately misrepresent them.
What can you tell us from the report what Hillary said?
No, because I haven't read it. But what Pickering said was that you said that they never interviewed her. That fact has been published. I don't believe he said that.
I believe what he said on those. I believe what he said on the program was they didn't go there because they thought that they had found where the mistakes were made, which were beneath her.
That's different than saying they interviewed Hillary Clinton. He said this morning that they interviewed her at the end of the process.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. We have a lot of callers on the line. We want to bring them into the conversation when we come back. We're also going to talk about the IRS. They had a bad week, too. Back shortly from Chicago. If you're listening to us on radio, we've got another full hour coming up. If you're watching us on television, don't go away. We'll see you next week. We'll be right back. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Anthony Anderson, Democrat Peter Giangreco, and Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. Our program tonight coming to you from our own base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, we are going to continue our discussion that we began recently about the Benghazi investigation, but also the other big story is the IRS and whether or not it was politicized when it asked some questions to those groups that were coming in for their 501c3 tax-exempt status, namely people that had Tea Party or the word patriot in their names. It's a big, big story brewing in Washington, D.C. Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. I asked you at the beginning of our last broadcast how big the Benghazi story was going to be. And during the break, you thought that this story could even be bigger. Why?
Well, this could be the story at the IRS could be very big if there turns out to be any connection to political people, either at the IRS or at the White House or Treasury Department. The what Jay Carney said Friday was simply false, factually false. He called the IRS an independent agency. It's actually a part of the Treasury Department. But the head of the IRS at the time was a Bush appointee.
Right.
We don't know at this point whether this was a group of politically biased mid-level people or lower level people, or whether there was something that goes further. I must say,
well, they started their initial report was they were blaming some low level people in Cincinnati that got started on this. But again, there seems to be some conflicting comments.
It's going to have to be a very thorough investigation, and I should say that the fact is the head of the IRS testified flatly in 2012 that this had not happened. That was false. We need to know why he made those statements. We also need to know the nature of some of the questions that went to these organizations were very political questions. And there is also, and this has not been widely reported, a suit by a Jewish organization that says that they were asked a whole series of questions to get tax-exempt status that were designed to see in their court filing whether they say designed to see whether or not they were on the same side of Middle Eastern politics as Barack Obama.
Do you? How do you look at this particular issue, Anthony Anderson, our card-carrying Republican tonight?
The way I look at this issue, it just gives more ammunition to those groups or those individuals who think, you know, less of the government, especially in terms of the Internal Revenue Service. I think this week when you get the report from the Office of the Inspector General as relates to this whole investigation, you're going to find a lot of things. That is why a lot of individuals have come out in front of this whole thing, because you know there's going to be a lot of messy things going on.
Well, the Associated Press, which has a leak on this report that's coming out, they say that it already contradicts some things that have been said by those that suggesting that it was a low level involvement.
Really?
Yeah.
What are they saying, Bruce?
Well, basically, they're just saying that they're looking at the comments of Lois Lerner. She was the one.
Doesn't know math.
She heads the IRS division that oversees tax exempt organization.
There's not much math involved at the IRS, right?
She was the one that originally said that it was low level people in Cincinnati. But again, according to this report, on June 29th of 2011, this Lois Lerner learned at a meeting that groups were being targeted, according to this watchdog's report. Quote, at the meeting, she was told that groups with Tea Party, Patriot, or 912 Project in their names were being flagged for additional and often burdensome scrutiny. And by the way, the 912, that's the project that was created by Glenn Beck.
And why? So, what did she then do about
that? She didn't. There was no clarification.
But there was any? Was there? Because I'm not aware of the Watchdog's report here, so I'm a little bit of a disadvantage here. But was there a reason? What was the reason why that those were flagged? Was there some precedent that some other group with that name in it had some hinky stuff?
I think
going
that's
on?
Part of. I mean, I think that's the big question that we don't know. But again, I think it's also interesting is that, if you're a Republican, you know that Susan Collins is, you know, as some people refer to as a rhino Republican or one of the most liberal Republicans in the United States Senate. She was on television today and she said, quote, a Republican of Maine. She said, I just don't buy that this was a couple of rogue IRS employees. After all, groups with progressive in their names were not targeted. She went on to say the revelations about the agency's tax agency only contribute to the profound distrust that the American people have in government. It is absolutely chilling that the IRS was singling out conservative groups for extra review. She said that she was disappointed that President Obama hasn't personally condemned this. The President, Collins said, needs to make crystal clear that this is totally unacceptable.
The Secretary of the Treasury hadn't said anything. Remember, the use of the IRS by the Nixon administration was one of the articles of impeachment.
That's right.
And it should have been. This is supposed to be an apolitical agency. If anybody came to the Museum of Broadcast Communication and looked at the substance of what you were doing and wanted to say, you'll get your tax-exempt status only if you present a pro-Republican or pro-Democratic kind of thing, that would be absolutely the sort of thing that we cannot stand. So everybody I've listened to is saying exactly what Pete and Anthony are saying, namely this is absolutely unacceptable and we need to find out how high this goes.
Well, and what the genesis of it was, because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, as a political operative, the payoff of messing with a few Tea Party organizations is nowhere near worth the potential problem because
what
you are talking
for,
about
what was the payoff for breaking into
people don't think they're going to get caught.
Somebody's office
this is the point though because I mean back then in Watergate no one knew
it was a third-rate robbery. Why would we be involved in that sort of thing?
But it's just I can't imagine that anybody with two political sense in their head would ever say, we need to get somebody on the IRS to go mess with these groups. Now, I will tell you, the proliferation.
Well, why did somebody up the high ladder seem to know about that? Why did this lowest learner know about this?
I don't know.
She was a long way from Cincinnati. I mean, why did she know about this?
Right. I have no idea. But here's the point, though. I mean, this is the risk, the payoff. I mean, the risk reward here makes no sense that this would come from the top. Plus, the fact that you would have to go through a Bush appointee, Shulman, as Charles pointed out, in order to actualize this, and Anthony made this point earlier, it just doesn't make any sense that it's a connection to the White House.
We've got to pause. It'll come out during an investigation.
Let me tell you something.
We have to break. But I can bet your neck there will be another congressional investigation. Absolutely. Maybe Daryl Issa will start looking into this. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We have lots of callers on the line. Let's go to Hayes, Virginia, where Shelley is listening to us on Sirius POTUS Radio tonight. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I've never done one of these call-in things before, so do I need to turn my radio down or something?
Yeah, turn your radio down, and welcome. Nice to have you with us tonight, listening to us on Sirius XM Radio, one of our satellite listeners. Where is Hayes, Virginia, Shelley?
Hayes, Virginia. Virginia is near Yorktown, Virginia, which is where Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown.
Very good. That's correct. What can we do for you tonight?
Well, I was listening to you guys chatting, and I just want to know, somebody there, I don't know who it was, that said that we need to know why the IRS was targeting Tea Party companies for tax exemption. Why do we need to know that? Why is that? I'm just wondering, why is that so important when we don't seem to need to know why Israel just bombed Syria, and we don't need to know why this guy in Texas planted a, perhaps planted a bomb and fertilized a plant? Why is this so important?
All right, let's let Charles Lipson respond.
Actually, I think we need to know what happened at the Texas explosion. And if it turned out not to be an industrial accident, that would be a catastrophic event, and we would need to know that. But the IRS is supposed to be politically neutral. And whether the Museum of Broadcast Communications is, as it actually is, a kind of straight down the middle organization, or if it were on the left or if it were on the right, it shouldn't matter for its tax-deductible status. It's either serving the kind of public purposes for which tax deduction is acceptable, or it's not. It either meets the rules or it doesn't. The IRS has a huge amount of power and an ability to know things about you that you don't tell your children. My income is, and the expenses I make and all the rest are known to the IRS. Bruce doesn't know them. Pete doesn't know them. Anthony doesn't know them. And I don't want them looking at me because they don't like my politics. That's why we need to know.
I also think, if I could just add one more point, and then I'll let the other guests make a point as well, and that is I think – of all the government agencies that some Americans fear, I think the agency that they fear the most because of the power that Charles just articulated is the IRS and also the Justice Department.
Well, and people deal with the IRS, right? You know, most people don't deal with the
government. It is not a happy letter when you get something from the IRS.
It's not a good thing. But look, I think here's the sort of larger picture, which is, I think, what the question is. There are the proliferation of these nonprofit groups, which are basically electoral stalking horses. Their bank accounts to wash money through is a huge problem. The Citizens United decision was just the worst decision.
And that's what we need, is low-level IRS employees making
but,
the decision.
So there's a reason why these things need to be policed. It needs to be really hard to get this status. You shouldn't be able to just walk into the post office.
But that's a policy decision, isn't it?
So I'm okay with it being hard to do it. Where you cross the line is, we're only gonna look at the ones on the right, or we're only gonna look at the ones on the left.
And it's a
that's
policy decision.
Now,
this has to be a policy decision.
Now, what I'm wondering about was there some puff of smoke that looked like fire? That there was some illegal.
Absolutely not. Because it's
we need
the fact,
to know.
But the fact of the matter is, these groups, whether it's the 9/12 Project or whether it's some sort of thing like that, they know that they're going to be scrutinized. And so they know they have to have their finances in order, because if not, then guess what? The IRS is going to come behind them and say, okay, you didn't do this right. You didn't do this right. So therefore, we're going to take these actions. No one wants the scrutiny of the Internal Revenue Service, especially if they don't have to get it.
No,
also, I think it is important, which is to Pete's point. I think that, in this particular case, I'm not suggesting this was the case. If you have people who hide under this political neutrality, be they left or right, and they decide, we can get away with this. We're going to push it, and if anybody comes after us, we're going to cry politics, and it's going to be a big, big story.
Right.
So we do want, as a taxpayer –
Right.
As a taxpayer, I want to make sure that those organizations
but
that
then
have
you get into either moral or immoral or legal or illegal. Which one do you want to have?
No, I think you can get into right or wrong. People are
right
either
or wrong.
People are either they're abiding by the tax laws or they're not.
And, this is not just a tax thing. It's everybody talks about nonprofit and if that's the case,
then why don't the IRS go into some of these black churches who we know espouse ideas that are all the way outside of their 501c3 status?
Well,
on a consistent basis.
You'd have to go to the white churches and do the same thing too.
But it doesn't happen. The fact of the matter is, it doesn't happen. So why start?
Not on either side.
What are you suggesting?
What I'm suggesting is they should have started somewhere, but it shouldn't have been with the conservative organizations. That's all I'm saying.
No.
If you want to make the whole situation fair, you believe
that the IRS should go in and look at some of the black churches?
Absolutely, because if you go on election day, you could see even before the election, these guys are in violation of their 501c3 status. No one says anything then. Say anything now.
You're missing the point, though.
The point was, you're not doing it to this organization over here. Why are you picking and choosing which organizations who you want to get scrutiny to? That's all I'm saying.
But Pete's point is you couldn't do it just to black church.
Because the white churches are just as political.
Yeah, they're just as political.
Yeah. But
why start with these organizations?
There's a reason.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, the hard right conservative. You got to Wheaton, Illinois, or any of these places. They're very, very political places, and that's okay because they have a First Amendment right to say whatever they want from the pulpit. I don't need to agree with them, but they have that right. This is where the issue is the issue of coordination. That's the big deal here because after Citizens United, nonprofit, what used to be C3s and C4s became just places to launder campaign money where you didn't have to disclose the donors. That's the real problem. You can't coordinate with a campaign or a party organization if you're a nonprofit.
And the IRS
that's the real rub here.
The IRS seems to have asked for the donors' names, which is clearly illegal.
Right. We're going to go to Naperville, Illinois. Tom is listening to us on WLS Radio. Thanks for calling 1-800-723-8289. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good evening. I'm a very strong conservative, and I don't like Obama or his people, but he is our president. If I don't like something, I want to use our system to make changes, as we've done for 200-plus years. But I have very uncomfortable feelings that every element of the late 60s are repeating, and they're building, especially the public disdain for government that has grown simply too powerful. I lived through Nixon. And if you honestly stand back today and accept where we're going with Benghazi, now the IRS, and I think we're probably going to see some more Solyndras or financial issues surface. But my point here is, if you really try to be honest with this, as of today, I went back and I looked at the 9 articles of impeachment for Nixon. And clearly, Article 8, 6, and 2 are word for word usable today. I don't want to relive Nixon. It was miserable. It damaged the country. But the parallels are unavoidable now. I also see Democrats at a defensive position higher than they were under Nixon. Yet, I don't see anyone discussing where's the limits, where's the tipping point for Democrats when they will finally pull back and say, look, somebody needs to go to be fired or go to jail. When is that point going to happen? What are those limits? I'm not hearing anyone talk about that.
Go to jail for what, Tom?
Article 8 under Nixon, making or causing to be made false or misleading public statements for the purpose of deceiving the people of the United States into believing that a thorough and complete investigation has been made. Gentlemen, there it is. What was a YouTube movie? This was a grotesque lie. Why can't we just call it a fabricated lie? That's what it was, guys. It wasn't a misleading or all these other patty cake words. It was a fabricated story to deflect from what really happened. Guys, we're going like a freight train down an ugly road here, and I don't see, to some degree, the Republicans being honest about it, and the Democrats certainly aren't being honest about it. Mm-hmm. But the planets are lining up here to a repeat of the late 60s and early 70s. I lived it. I didn't like it. But at one point, there was a tipping point where powerful Republicans went to Nixon and said, you got to go. And I don't see the Democrats ever being willing to say this, even for the mid-level people in the Obama organization.
Pete?
Well, I think
pretty
Tom,
strong.
Tom, you have very strong opinions, but I you got to have facts. You got to have opinions that are based in facts.
Sir,
and
this
I don't
was
think
a lie.
We. I don't think
this was
we.
A lie. Okay. The story was a lie. The YouTube story was just a lie. The CIA has already come out and said.
But
this.
Let me ask you a question.
I want to ask Tom a follow up. Okay. Tom, do you because there are Democrats that have been saying for many many years that George Bush and Dick Cheney. They lied to the American people, and their lie led to the Iraq War. Now, do you believe that George Bush either lied or wasn't telling the truth and the whole truth about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq that led to the war? Would you put him to the same measurement of truthfulness as you would President Obama?
Democrats had 7 years to do this under his administration, and they had the last 4 years to retroactively do it, and they didn't. And the same, and I feel the same position. If people did this under Bush, they should have gone to jail. Yes.
Well, again,
and I feel the same way towards Nixon. Mm-hmm. He should have gone to jail.
Right.
But what I'm saying here is,
and also you could go back to 1964 and you could talk about the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and what Lyndon Johnson told the American people as well. That wasn't true as well. So
and he knew it was.
And he knew that it wasn't true. So we've got to pause. Thanks for your call. Back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Duman back in Chicago. Our Democrat this evening is Peter Giangreco. He is a principal in the Strategy Group, one of the leading Democratic political operative teams in the United States. Anthony Anderson also joins us. He is in the criminal justice field. However, he is also with the Republican Precinct Project, and his goal is to have a Republican precinct captain in every precinct in the state. Charles Lipson also joins us from the University of Chicago, from Marks, Mississippi, longtime guest on this program. Before we go back to calls, let me just mention something that we talked about in hour number one. We were talking about the Daryl Issa investigation into the Benghazi attack and all the emails that were going back and forth that are now part of the public record. Again, that hearing will continue next week, and I'm sure that we'll have another week of bombshell revelations coming out of that committee. We may talk about it again next week on the broadcast. However, because some of the information led back to the doorstep of Hillary Clinton or Hillary Clinton's advisors. Last evening, Rand Paul, the junior senator from Kentucky, who many feel is angling to run for president of the United States, like his father has done on a number of occasions, he was addressing a Republican group in Iowa, and he said that Hillary Clinton's failure to respond to diplomats' repeated requests for increased security at the Benghazi facility constitutes, quote, a dereliction of duty that should preclude her from holding higher office, end of quote, Rand Paul. So, again, any doubt in your mind that Rand Paul is running for president, Pete Giangreco?
There's no doubt in my mind that he's running for president and that he's decided that the way through win the Republican primary is to say outrageously ridiculous things like that. So, I mean, I think that's for the standard that you go. And it falls in line with where the Romney campaign started, sort of the motivation behind the ISA hearings, which I don't even understand why they're in government operations and not. Why isn't this at the Intelligence Committee where you actually have people know what they're talking about and not Daryl Issa, who is among the most partisan figures in Washington? So, I mean, I think there's two different kinds of people who are involved in this. I think they're the showmen like Issa and Paul, who are really full of it and very partisan. I think there's more.
So you don't think
I think there's more serious Republicans.
You don't,
I think there are more serious Republicans. I think Mike Rogers on the House Intelligence Committee
right.
has been much more measured about this stuff. I think there's been folks in the Senate been much more. They're critical and they want more answers, but they are not being partisan.
Not
Paul
not
and Issa are totally partisan,
Anthony,
totally over the top.
Anthony
totally
Anderson,
totally
partisan, but they're just trying to get to the truth of the matter. I mean, to
no,
me
they're
personally,
not. Ron Paul said that in Iowa for a reason.
It was to
win
the most
a nomination.
Part, who's going to listen to this guy? I mean, seriously, from out of Kentucky, who's going to go with this guy? For the most part, he is who he is.
A lot of people.
There's a lot of people, but you know, outside of Kentucky and a few other neighborhoods, you know, they're all white folks. I mean, who else is going to vote for this guy?
Well, really? we're talking about a Republican primary, which is a bunch of white folks.
White folks have been a strength of the Republican
Party. Yeah, for the most part, but not the ones that attract Rand Paul. not the ones that Rand Paul is attracting. I mean, it's just he's so far to the right. He makes Mitt Romney look like a
Oh, I see. I disagree with that totally. I think Ron Paul is hitting Rand Paul.
He's in a lot of the right tones, but Bruce, he's not going to be the nominee for the Republican Party.
I think
he expands the party more than a lot of other Republicans do.
To openly politicize this as Karl Rove's ad does, attacking Hillary Clinton, and as Rand Paul did, I think is a mistake. They really need to go after the evidence. And let me just say, on the committee, I thought that the fact that there were a number of prosecutors, former prosecutors, Trey Gowdy, Chaffetz, a number of those people asked very tough, clear questions. They really got information out. I was really struck by the fact that the people on the Democratic side really didn't cross-examine those witnesses to try to build a case. There were speeches made by Elijah Cummings and others, but I thought the Democrats didn't acquit themselves very well. It may be that Issa is a very political guy,
The
questions
total.
That were asked by the ordinary committee members were serious, incisive questions, and they built one on the other, and they got a lot of real information,
they'll get more incisive than what Pickering.
Well,
and
I think
here's
I think the reason why, and I don't know any inside information. This is just my guess at it. I don't think, just as the Republicans have totally overplayed their hand on a lot of this stuff, the Paul statement, the ISA hearings, the way they were constructed, are just so obviously partisan because there's no balance to them. I think the Democrats have been smart not to go the other way. The three people who
they have gone the other way. They defended the administration.
Hang on. The three people who testified before ISA were career Foreign Service people. They were very credible. They were not partisan. They were very sympathetic. They were very frustrated and angry that four of their colleagues were killed, and they believed that there was more that they could do. Now, it may be the fact that if you had had the military commanders there, they would have laid out the case that, in fact, we all wanted something to do. It wasn't doable. And I think the hearing would have gotten a lot less press, and that's why
we're
ISA excluded
those
them.
Hearings. So, we're going to see that.
So this is my point, though. I think the Democrats on the committee, I think, are not making the mistakes the Republicans are by politicizing. They're saying, look, these are credible people who are talking about their slice of things. What they saw from Tripoli, there was no reason to attack them.
But those credible people, releasing all the information that's been released, you're building up. You're making the point that I think we were trying to make in the first hour of this program. They were pointing fingers way up the ladder.
Well, no, they really weren't. That's why the folks that got fired were the people who were on the other end of the phone. I think it's interesting now that Greg Hicks is on the other end of the phone now, which is a good place for him. Which is he's now desking that region.
You
in
think
Libya.
He was so. His demotion because he actually was a whistleblower is a justifiable thing?
No, in fact, what the State Department said, I forgot who said it, but what the State Department said is there was a request to come home. That he's got equal pay and equal responsibility.
You don't think he's been demoted as a political thing?
I don't know, but that's what the State Department said. So
of course we can trust them.
Well, look, you don't know, and I don't know. I'm just being honest enough to tell you that he thinks he's been demoted.
Most people, I think, would say he's demoted.
No, when you get demoted in the government, you get your pay cut, and he did not.
Well, that's a way to shut you up also.
Hush money.
Yeah,
let's go to Tom.
He didn't hush. It was a bad investment.
But still.
Maybe he could tell more.
This intimidation thing is also serious.
We've got to be back. Tom in Chicago, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. Go ahead, Tom.
Good evening. Here are the questions on Benghazi that weren't asked. That shortly after the hearing, I dispatched an email to my congressman post. Number one, what was the mission of the annex? Number two, who is or what is an annex chief? Number three, what was his reporting channel? Number four, who was read into the loop on the mission of the annex? And the final question I asked my congressman was simple. What was so critical to bring Ambassador Stevens to Benghazi to meet with the Turkish consul general with an unstable government and threats through the roof? I got to tell you, gentlemen, it's not what's being talked about. It's what's not being talked about. I'd like to know what was going on in the annex.
Charles, let's let Charles respond. Let's let Charles respond.
You're absolutely right. This has not been seriously talked about. Most people think I'm an expert in international politics, and so I read a lot of this kind of behind-the-scenes chatter. The general consensus is that what was going on was that there were weapons there that were being transshipped via the U.S. through Turkey to the on-the-ground fighters against Assad in Syria, and that's one reason that they didn't want a high profile. And some of the arguments have been that they didn't want a lot of security there because they didn't want to draw attention
right.
to that mission. But we have not been told that. The way that the military talks about it is left of bang, bang, and right of bang. Left of bang is why didn't we put in the people? What were they to secure it? What were they doing there? Why was it so important? Then we have the what happened that night, and then right of bang is essentially what is either misinformation, that's Pete's basic argument, a bureaucratic fight, and misinformation gets out, or there was a deliberate cover-up that went somewhere up the chain, either in the State Department or the CIA or the White House, which coordinated the interagency. That's what we don't know yet. That's what additional hearings ought to try to find out.
Well, and that's really where the focus ought to be. I think the caller asked really good questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where the focus ought to be, because that's where you learn where the mistakes were. Now, look, I mean, the historical parallel, and David Gregory actually did a pretty good job of this, and sometimes you overlearn the lessons, right? The historical parallel was the Marine barracks in Lebanon. And you had 19 Americans who were killed at the Libyan consulate or embassy. I forgot what it was. I think it was a consulate. Right before that, we didn't learn from that. We left 241 Marines at the end of a runway who were killed because
right.
they were sitting ducks. And that's where this policy came from of, if you put too much force in one place that's unstable, you become a target. And that's the reason why they wanted just enough security, not too much security, because then you become a target.
There's one additional issue.
I think we overlearned that lesson here.
The president promised that the people responsible for this would
yes.
be, quote, brought to justice. Nothing has happened as far as we know.
Well,
and the FBI's investigation was a joke. People have a right to be outraged about this.
Well, if we knew who planned this assault and executed this assault, there would have been a drone strike by now. I mean, there's a lot of people in the administration who attacked this administration.
We don't know there has been.
We do know that there has not.
Yeah, but we don't know name, rank, serial number. We don't know the person.
Extremist with ties to Al Qaeda.
You don't have a name.
That's what.
And Bruce, I guarantee when we get a name and a location, they will take them away.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're going to toot our own horn for just a second. If we were to go back and look at the tape of September 16th, which was the first broadcast we did when we spent an entire program talking about Susan Rice and all the programs that she was on that day, there was also someone who was on Face the Nation that day, and that was one of the prime ministers or the prime minister of Libya. And he was the one on that program on CBS. He identified it as a terrorist attack that day. And I was raising the question on that broadcast, and we took a lot of calls that night. Why one person was saying it was a terrorist attack, and our own person representing the United States was basically saying, blaming it on the video, the anti-Islamic video.
Yeah, but you have to remember what happened right when the attack started. The Libyan militia that was assigned to protect this
they
split.
They ran.
Are you really going to listen to the prime minister of Libya when his guys, At least in the, you know, in this, as so this turned, goes to fog of war. But the first thing we knew is those guys split, and there was never any question about
it. My point
that.
Is,
so why would you take his word for it?
I was suspect of that story and Susan Rice's performance, and we discussed it for 2 hours on this program.
But
let's
this,
go to
but,
Todd
but,
in Chicago listening to us on WLS.
Yes. Hello.
Go ahead.
I'd like to say that I can hear the frustration in your voices when you're talking to these Democrats about this situation, because it's pure lies when you talk to them. It's impossible to debate people who are pure liars and shameless about it. You got a guy in the studio there who's doing it. You got a president and you got a secretary of state who did it. And we're supposed to believe everybody, or we're supposed to believe them over everybody else who says everything different. These Democrats, the way they're going, it's just like you don't trust them. You can't trust them. They're pure liars. Barack Obama is a serial liar. He does it in order to get what he wants. He lied again. He got busted. Now these Democrats are telling us, oh, it happened so long ago. Oh, that didn't happen like this. I mean, that is an example to anybody with an IQ of a perfect example of someone who's just lying through their teeth, because they don't really care what you want. They don't really care what you think. They're just going to say their point so 51% of the population believe them. Mm-hmm. And they don't really care about the other 49, because tell you what, they don't need them. They don't need them. Well, they just need the stupid people to vote for them.
Let's let Pete respond.
The useful idiots. Right. And that's what you got. You got a shill hack in your studio there with you. And he's a shameless person. And he should really be, I don't know, I mean, you live in a country where it's pretty dangerous. I would think that he would be smarter than that. That's all. I mean, people are. It's the,
well, stay on the Todd, conversations are getting very heated
because when you're dealing with liars,
Todd, stay on the line.
There's really almost no other resort.
You don't debate anymore. Todd, stay on the line. Don't hang up. You've insulted one of our guests. Pete, do you want to respond to Todd?
Look, I think Todd is indicative of the Republican overreach on this, because in this diatribe that he just went through, there wasn't one single fact that backed up anything that he said. It was just opinion. This guy hates Barack Obama. He's willing to believe anything that's negative about Barack Obama, the truth be damned. So, Todd, you know, it doesn't really bother me that you call me names. You call the president names. You hate the president. You don't like me. That's fine. You're not real useful to this process because you bring no facts to this. And I think that's what the whole point of tonight's show is. Right. We want to try to figure out what the facts are. Right, we know that very clearly the facts as they were presented in the first 2 weeks of this thing by the administration was incorrect. That we know. Was this a tragic mistake or was this a scandal? There's no information that says that this is a scandal because there's no fact pattern. But Todd and people like him and Rand Paul don't care about the facts.
Okay, so he trashed you, you trashed him.
No, I think I was pretty kind to him, actually. Let me
try to summarize this and come back to what I've said at least a couple times during this program. I am not someone who's a knee-jerk a critic of President Obama.
No, you aren't.
Personally, I like President Obama. I liked him as a human being, you know, before when I knew him and he used to be a guest on this program.
Right.
But in this particular case, he is very, very smart. He is very analytical. He is academic. He is professorial. And the question that I ask again, to me, it is hard for me to believe, knowing the person that he is, that he would not ask what Susan Rice was going to say when he had to know that she was going on 5 shows because it was the hottest story in the world. Mm-hmm. So now someone is going on. They've been invited on all the shows. First of all, no one goes on any Sunday show if it isn't approved by the White House.
Right.
You know that's the case.
Absolutely.
So they send her out 5 times. She's going to go out and tell the story. It is absolutely unbelievable to me that the president would not have said to somebody, what is she going to say? What are her talking points?
Essential.
I can't believe that he did not know that.
I don't think anybody's saying that he didn't know that.
Nobody has any information one way or the other at this point. We may eventually learn it.
So what you're saying is staff never, never, the staff, his
they
staff.
Will never say. Never,
The staff never shared with him all these 100 emails where clearly his head of CIA said, we do know that Islamic extremists with ties to Al-Qaeda participated in the attack.
Bruce.
I'm suggesting is that if the president did not have that information and it never made it to him, then someone other than who's been fired thus far, because that person is at the White House, you don't keep information like that. If there's a debate amongst the interagency, you don't keep a piece of information like this and decide that you're going to follow suit of some deputy press person over at the State Department.
My hunch is the same as yours, Bruce, but I want to say that the president's exposure is really about his speech at the UN. That happens a couple of weeks later. He's still blaming the video.
Right.
He's still refusing.
But there's another. There's another.
So I think that the president does have exposure.
Got 10 seconds because then we're out of time.
It may be that the administration's point was to try to turn down the international heat, not the domestic thing.
Oh yeah, I think weeks before the election, they're concerned about the international.
Charles, come on. There's a legitimate point. This is a very cautious administration.
We got to pause.
I'll come back with this.
Only when you come back, because we're out of time for our broadcast.
They did it to keep Americans from getting killed. That's the reason.
Charles Lipson,
safe.
They have all been with us. This program is a Gen B production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio. Thanks to Tom Burr Cruz and Dan Dorfman for their assistance in the production of this very lively broadcast. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.